This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Republicans in the Wisconsin state legislature have said that they're considering impeachment proceedings against state Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz if she does not recuse herself from upcoming lawsuits seeking to redraw the state's voting maps. The Republican lawmakers claim that statements that Justice Protasiewicz made on the campaign trail about gerrymandering in the state and campaign donations she received from the state's Democratic Party should disqualify her from sitting on these redistricting cases. This has all caught the attention of national and even international news outlets. It's not clear at this point, though, if Republican lawmakers would actually follow through on suggestions that they might pursue impeachment. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Should the state's newest justice recuse herself from redistricting cases? Should the state legislature impeach her if she does not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Rich Kramer is a reporter here at Wisconsin Public Radio. He's been following this story. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
All right. Before we get to the I word, impeachment, Rich, let's talk about these redistricting cases and the comments that then-candidate Protasiewicz made about the state's current legislative maps. That's kind of what got us here.
Yeah. During the campaign, Justice Protasiewicz wasn't bashful about talking about redistricting. She also talked about the state's abortion ban or near total ban, I should say. So she said with regard to the voting maps that the maps were rigged, the GOP drawn maps, and that she would look forward to taking a look at them if a case came to the state Supreme Court.
Now, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, last month in an interview, had broached this idea of impeachment. In a more recent interview, he didn't reject it out of hand. He seems to be a little milder on it. Can you give the history of talk of impeachment here, Rich?
Yeah, so Assembly Speaker Voss was on a conservative radio show out of Wausau last month in August, and essentially said that those comments from Protasiewicz showed that she has bias in the case and that she couldn't impartially, you know, decide them. So it all started saying, you know, he hopes that she recuses, but did say that essentially said that impeachment would be on the table if she failed to recuse, because that would be a conflict that he just couldn't abide. So that's where things were last month. It got a lot of attention, as you mentioned, a lot of attention. You've got the Democratic Party of Wisconsin pouring money into an ad campaign trying to convince lawmakers to back away from that. And more recently, Voss does appear to have softened, or at least that's what's been the way it's been reported. Last week, he was on a conservative radio show hosted by Dan O'Donnell, and he said that he's not predicting impeachment because he doesn't know if the assembly will do that. He did repeat calls for her, for Justice Protasiewicz to recuse. He said essentially that that would be a good thing for her legacy, because people have heard the comments, and Voss says they can see that she couldn't be impartial in this situation.
Take us through briefly, Rich, the impeachment process.
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways to remove a judge or justice from their seat, whether it be on the Supreme Court or a circuit court or state of appeal, court of appeals. So the first is impeachment. That's what everyone's been talking about. The assembly, the state assembly, would initiate that with a simple majority. But that has to be for specific reasons, including, according to the statute, corrupt conduct in office or for the commission of a crime or misdemeanor. If the assembly votes to impeach Justice Protasiewicz in this case, then it would be up to the state Senate to act as a court, and they could convict or acquit Protasiewicz. The conviction would require a two-thirds vote. But in the meantime, if the assembly votes to impeach, the time between that and Senate action, Protasiewicz would not be allowed to sit on cases. She'd essentially be sidelined. There's also a process called removal by address, and that requires a two-thirds majority in the state assembly and the state Senate. And in that situation, the legislature must serve the individual judge or justice with a copy of charges. The judge or justice would have the ability to present a defense, And those charges must allege misconduct or that a judge isn't physically or mentally qualified to exercise their judicial functions. So there's a little bit, it's more vague, I guess, that, but those are the two processes that I'm aware of at this point. It's moving so quickly.
And if I read your reporting correctly, Rich, you counted up the number of judicial impeachments in all of Wisconsin history, and the number you came up with was one.
Yeah,
one time the assembly advanced this, the Senate didn't end up convicting in this particular case. So this is not something we're doing all the time here.
Not since 1853. Levi Hubbell was on the state Supreme Court. This is a time when briefly there was two Supreme Courts. And anyway, he went back to being a circuit court judge, but he was impeached over claims that he accepted bribes and heard cases in which he had financial interests. As you mentioned, he was acquitted, but ended up resigning as a circuit court judge. So this is largely, unprecedented territory.
Talking to Rich Kramer, WPR reporter, about at least talk of an impeachment process against Wisconsin's newest state Supreme Court Justice, Janet Protasiewicz, if she doesn't recuse from a case on redistricting. Let's bring in a caller at 800-642-1234. Mark is with us in Rockton. Mark, hi.
Hi. Enjoy your show. Look, I might be the only true independent left in the state. So the question isn't whether the maps are rigged. The maps are rigged. In so many states, including Wisconsin, you've got two-thirds of one party holding the legislature control. And then in our case, we've got Democrats winning the majority of the vote for governor or the recent Supreme Court. That, by definition, means that maps are rigged. So they might not like that term, but the maps are rigged. The question is, are the maps legal? And that question is for the Supreme Court to decide. I don't, to my knowledge, think that she rendered an opinion on whether the current maps are illegal, but they're rigged.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. And Rich, that might be a point that people will be arguing about. She expressed a personal view on the current maps, but Mark makes the case she didn't say how she would rule on them. She didn't say if they were legal or illegal. Is that the kind of argument we might be seeing if this thing moves forward?
Absolutely, 100%. So Protasiewicz has previously said that she wasn't, her comments weren't committing her to how she's going to vote on it, just expressing values. And that values about the general idea and whether or not the maps are rigged. So that falls into all sorts of tricky areas. In 2002, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that candidates running for justice positions can express their values, and it's free speech. But again, in the state statutes, it seems pretty clear that a person has to commit that they're going to vote in a certain way. But of course, this is all up to interpretation by people who have a lot more brain power than I.
And a couple of quick developments, Rich, before we let you go. First of all, you mentioned the Democratic Party here in Wisconsin not taking this lightly, not looking at this as a maybe. They've got a big ad campaign. What's going on?
Yeah, they announced last week that they're going to be spending, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin is going to spend $1 million, and they've got some allies. So it's a total ad campaign worth $4 million, according to the DPW. And really, it's meant to pressure GOP lawmakers to back away from impeachment. Some lawmakers have already received a lot of communications from constituents, and we did see at least one Republican state representative say that they would not support impeachment. But the GOP has a very comfortable majority in the assembly. If some state senators were to say that they would not support impeachment, that might change things a little bit, because the margin is not as great in the state Senate. But the ad campaign from the Democratic Party is underway. And also, there was a group called the Republican Accountability Project. They announced a six-figure ad campaign today targeting Voss and Republicans for threatening impeachment. The ads are going to run on Fox News in Wisconsin. There's also going to be digital ads running in the districts of Voss and 20 other Republicans. So, yes, they're getting the word out.
And briefly, a lawsuit filed today on behalf of two Protasiewicz voters saying, trying to block any potential impeachment.
Yes. Former candidate for the Supreme Court filed this lawsuit asking the justices to issue an injunction blocking Voss and the state assembly from beginning impeachment proceedings. The major claims are that the assembly would be violating its constitutional authority with impeachment because the lawsuit alleges the comments made by Protasiewicz don't come near the level required under the state constitution for impeachment. Also, the lawsuit alleges impeachment would violate constitutional rights of the two petitioners who are Protasiewicz voters, but also the rights of others who voted for her in April.
Rich, thanks for bringing us up to date.
Thanks for having me.
That's Rich Kramer, WPR reporter. We've been talking about his reporting on talk from Republican lawmakers in Wisconsin about the idea of impeaching Justice Janet Protasiewicz, who was elected to the state Supreme Court in April, took office last month. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions about all of this. Coming up, a former Wisconsin State Supreme Court justice joins the show. That's up next on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about threats to bring impeachment proceedings against Justice Janet Protasiewicz, the newest state Supreme Court justice. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When do you think a judge should recuse from a case? What's the bar? Does it apply here, do you think? What do you think of this idea of impeachment? Join in at 800-642-1234. Justice Jeanine Geske is a distinguished professor of law at Marquette University Law School, where she serves as director of the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice. She served on the Wisconsin Supreme Court from 1993 to 1998. Justice Geske, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
What was your reaction to hearing this floated, this idea of impeachment proceedings against Justice Protasiewicz?
It is outrageous. I am incredibly upset about the legislature or legislators threatening a justice about something that she might do in the future. And so, I'm just speechless that they would misuse that constitutional provision in that way.
Let's get into the idea of recusal at the center of this. Republicans, whether they end up impeaching or not, saying, hey, now Justice Protasiewicz in the campaign shouldn't have said the state's redistricting maps were rigged. That shows a sign of bias in cases that are likely to come to her. What do you think of that argument?
Well, let me back up for a minute. There's some big irony here. There was a case out of Minnesota, it was referred to during the last discussion. It's the Republican Party of Minnesota versus White that went to the United States Supreme Court, and the Republicans in Minnesota were arguing that judicial candidates should be able to state their opinions on legal and political issues as long as they don't commit to a final vote. And the U.S. Supreme Court, the conservative part of the Supreme Court, said you can't constitutionally bar a candidate from doing that. They have a First Amendment right of stating their opinion on legal and political issues. So there's some irony there that was the Republicans making that argument, and the Republicans, the more conservative justices, held that way. So what Justice Protasiewicz did during her campaign is exactly permitted under Minnesota versus White. So the next stage is now, of course, the Republicans are upset that they think that she's going to vote a certain way on the case. She's never committed on that. And they're threatening impeachment for something she hasn't done yet. They're not threatening to impeach her for the campaign. They're threatening to impeach her in case she decides not to recuse herself. So it's really just threatening her in advance. And finally, I think that, you know, even if it were a violation of the judicial code, which I don't think it is, for her to sit, it doesn't mean that it fits the constitutional definition of impeachment, which requires corruption or a crime, neither of which are invoked at all in this situation. So, you know, and I am concerned what the legislators are thinking about is going ahead with the impeachment, not necessarily going to the trial, but pulling her off the cases that are going to be heard by the court this session.
Another concern that's been raised has to do with donations. In this case, the state's Democratic Party directly supported the campaign of Protasiewicz. We've seen support for various candidates from Republican and Democratic parties, influential donors on both sides of the aisle. Do you see that as grounds for recusal? And if so, when?
Well, it's interesting. That's another interesting point, because I was part of a group of retired judges that filed a petition before the court a couple years ago asking the court to adopt a rule about contributions, political contributions, and recusal. And the majority of the court at that time decided not, said absolutely not. A political contribution cannot disqualify a judge. And so we have the most liberal or conservative, depending which way you want to read it, ethical provision in the country on that issue, saying that contributions should not make a difference. On the other hand, you know, there is an argument that the Democratic Party would benefit, obviously, if the case were reversed from a previous decision. And so there's an argument there, but the problem is there's no ethical provision that covers that. And in fact, the ethical provision that the Supreme Court's adopted actually would allow her to sit on the case. We'll have to see what she's done. My understanding is she's not decided yet. She's asked for briefs from the parties, and she'll make the decision, you know, one way or another. But this threatening her to take certain action is really disturbing.
Former State Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Geske about the latest on the Supreme Court. The newest justice calls for possible impeachment if she doesn't recuse from a case she commented on during the campaign, or an issue she commented on during the campaign. Let's bring on a caller. Chris is with us in Eau Claire. Chris, hello.
Hi. So I am a voter. I voted here in Wisconsin for Justice Protasiewicz. And I have very much have interest in seeing this case taken up. In some cases here, some of these districts, it would take almost a 75% vote to remove some of these people from their districts. So I feel that this move in Wisconsin is directly an attack on me as a voter. It's an attempt to silence or intimidate my voice here as a voter here in Wisconsin.
Chris, thanks for that call. And Justice Geske, Rich was telling us about this lawsuit, making basically Chris's argument there, preemptively saying, no, state legislature, this doesn't meet the grounds for impeachment, and it violates the rights of voters like Chris. What do you think of that attempt at a preemptive lawsuit?
Well, I think the first part of it, in terms of trying to restrain the legislature, I think legally that may be some problematic before they've done anything that to restrain them. The second part is really an interesting argument, but, you know, people had voted for somebody. That doesn't mean they can't be impeached down the road. The question is, are there grounds for that impeachment, which I don't think there are. You know, one of the ironies in all of this is that not only has Justice Protasiewicz offered sort of an opinion on how she sees these maps, but so has every other member of the court, because they decided it a year ago. So they're all on record as to what they saw that last case to look like. So it's a little ironic that anybody's worrying about what she said when we're going to know what they've all said. And the question is, as one caller pointed out, is the map legal or not? And what are the issues on the case that's being brought up?
I want to spend a few minutes, Justice Geske, talking about changes on our Supreme Court. Now, I don't know if the 1990s, when you served, were, you know, a golden age of peace and harmony on the court, but it seems like things have gotten more polarized. I mean, apart from, you know, when we had an argument about whether one justice had tried to strangle another or just brushed his hands against her neck, even apart from that, it seems like things are more polarized on the court and in the campaigns. Is there something to that?
Well, I think they are, although there is often dissension on our court and courts all over the country. There are people with very different judicial views, sometimes different political views in the past, and big egos. I mean, and I was one of them, so I'll put myself in that basket. And so it's not uncommon that there's a lot of argument, discord, or even dislike of others. But the difference now is that it's gone public, that we've had things like press conferences and people on radio talking about the inner workings of the court. And we really tried, and other courts have tried, to keep it internal, to have the disputes at the table, but not to make it public. And what that does is it undermines the court's credibility with the public, because the public is looking at this. And I get asked all the time, what's happening up there? And that's really unfortunate, because we need the support of the population for the judicial decisions. Otherwise, the courts, you know, can't play their role as that third independent branch.
There's a perception, I think, now, Justice Geske, that, yes, it's a nonpartisan race. You don't run with a D or an R next to your name on the ballot. But everybody kind of knows this is the Democratic candidate and this is the Republican candidate. I mean, is that being fair to the justices? Do you think that they are in some ways above that partisanship?
Well, I think it's really unfortunate that that's what's happened to our judicial races. You know, states like Texas, the judicial candidates have run on parties for as long as I can remember. But Wisconsin had a very proud judiciary that did not run on political party issues. And frankly, candidates tried to get people from both sides of the aisle in support. It was not infrequent that a candidate would have a Republican governor and a Democratic governor both as co-chairs. And that's changed. And now, you know, our world, our culture is so divided down partisan lines. Unfortunately, that's happened with our courts. And then you see the kind of money, the $50 million that were spent on this race, being poured into sort of the media campaign on that theory. I think it's really unfortunate, and people get the sense that it's a legislative kind of body rather than a judicial one.
And very briefly, Justice Geske, if current justices called you up and said, "Hey, how can we work together better?" What would be your piece of advice for them?
Well, you know, I believe that they probably need, and I'm not suggesting myself that I do this work, but they need an independent, out of state, somebody that doesn't know them, mediator to come and help facilitate discussions, because it appears, at least from what I've read, that they don't trust each other at all. And without trusting each other, it's very difficult to find a collaborative result on some of these issues, or at least to treat each other respectfully on these issues. And I think they probably need some outside help at this point.
Justice Geske, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
You're welcome.
That's Justice Jeanine Geske, Distinguished Professor of Law at Marquette University Law School, Director of the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice, and a former Wisconsin State Supreme Court Justice back in the 90s. Been looking at the latest news about current Justice Janet Protasiewicz and what's at stake if impeachment proceedings are brought against her, and some of the wider issues and discord facing Wisconsin State Supreme Court. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, students are kicking off their science classes in the new school year. What are some of the best ways to teach that subject? Kate and her guests look at science education and some ways we could maybe improve it. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Have you ever heard the sound of your own voice on a recording, say, and thought, do I really sound like that? Or, oh no, I can't believe I sound like that? If so, you are not alone. A survey out this summer asked people if they liked the sound of their own voices. And when they asked if they liked their voices when they hear them on a recording, 57% of people said, nope, don't like it. Over half of people said they would or might be interested in changing their voices. Part of the story is physics. When we're talking and hearing our own voices, we get the inside experience with vibrations in our heads amplifying the sound for us. On a recording, all that's gone. We hear it like everybody else hears it. I can relate. When I first did stuff on the radio, I really did not like hearing my own voice. Really, really. Now I'm okay with it, and maybe that's because I got better at talking. Maybe it's because I lowered my expectations a lot. I don't know, but either way, it's working for me. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Living an active lifestyle is one way to keep ourselves healthy and mobile as we age. But as our bodies change with time, our fitness routines may have to change along with it. Our next guest is a physical therapy expert joining us with advice on how to adapt our exercise habits so we can stay active well into old age. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How have your exercise habits changed as you age? What are some activities you've been able to keep doing as you've gotten older? What are some you've left behind? Or have you found new ways to get exercise over the years or decades? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carlin Ault is a clinical associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Milwaukee. Carlin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. It's my pleasure to be here.
Before we get into the how, let's talk a little bit about the why. Carlin, what are the benefits of keeping exercise going, keeping fitness going as we get older?
Well, as we age, our muscles and bones can change a little bit, and it's important to stay strong, especially in those functional muscle groups that help us get up and down off of the ground, get in and out of chairs, cars, those sorts of things. And it is true, if you don't use it, you will lose it. So it's especially important through the aging process to continue to load our muscles and bones and continue to push ourselves so we have the stimulus to add more muscle and bone.
You know, the workout my 20-year-old daughters might be doing now might not be right for me. How do we evaluate as we get older, you know, this is the appropriate thing to accomplish those goals you just lined out? This maybe isn't the thing I do anymore.
Well, it, of course, everything is individualized. If you have any underlying conditions or you're on certain medications, those things can make a difference. But you may be able to do a lot of the exercises that your 20-year-old daughter is doing. So don't sell yourself short. We want to make sure that we're continuing to strengthen our muscles. And the good news is, while we have some physiological and biological changes in our tissues with aging, the good news is those tissues are still very responsive to appropriate loading. So you can add muscle mass, you can add some strength to your bone, or slow down the rate of the decline by staying active. I always like to say we all need to move more and sit less. And anything that you do is better than nothing. So that's a good place to start.
That is. Let's talk about strength a little bit. You mentioned some key muscle groups for doing things like mm-hmm. getting up and down, things like that. What are some of the muscle groups we might focus on? What are some good entry points to exercising those zones?
Yeah, that's a great question. I focus a lot on sit to stand or being able to get up off of the floor. As we're aging, or really at any age, we can sometimes find ourselves on the floor. But as you are aging and becoming a little bit weaker, which is part of the normal aging process, is you do lose some muscle mass, to make sure you're focusing on the muscles that are used for functional tasks. So if you're sitting in a chair and you stand up, you need your glutes, which is your backside, and your quads on the front of your thigh to be able to help you lift your body weight to be able to stand up. So anything that's involving some sit to stand activities are very important for those muscle groups. Also, the outside of your hips, when we walk, we stand on one leg for part of the time and we're swinging the other leg. So making sure the outside of our leg muscles are nice and strong so we stay stable. It's all about reducing your risk of having a fall, because falls can really disrupt your life, and staying strong will allow you to be able to better able to catch yourself or prevent yourself from falling. But at least if you find yourself on the floor, you've got the muscle strength to get back up.
And then how about keeping our cardiovascular exercise going over time?
Yeah, that's another great question. So a muscle is muscle. So the heart is a muscle, and we have to exercise that just like we exercise our peripheral muscles. And the target heart rate the heart rate, you want to work hard enough that you're challenging your muscles, whether it's a muscle in your thigh or your heart muscle. So we always do need to be pushing ourselves a little bit above what our daily level of function is. For cardiovascular exercise, you want to be trying to get around 60 to 80% of your heart rate for whatever period of time you can do that for. The guideline is 150 minutes per week of moderate physical activity. So if you break that up, if you're doing a little over 30 minutes or so per day of aerobic physical activity, that is a good place to start. But you'd like to push yourself a little more than just what you're typically used to doing.
Talking to Carlin Ault, clinical associate professor at UW-Milwaukee on physical therapy, talking about our changing exercise and fitness needs as we age. You can join in with your questions or your story at 800-642-1234. James is with us now in Fountain City. James, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. Say, I'm 75. And I started with endurance sports, in the late 70s or so, doing Birkebeiners, cross-country ski races all over the Midwest. And I've continued on mountain bike series, In fact, I'm on my way right now to a canoe workout, which is pretty intense canoeing since I live near Winona and the home of Winona Canoes. And plus, I'm a master swimmer. All I can say to people listening to this is you don't quit. You know, you don't quit unless you literally can't get up off a chair. But I'm a big proponent of staying active. I mean, I lift at the Y. I do all these things. I don't know where I got that from. Must be genetics or something. But
well, I think it helps if it's fun too, right? Mm-hmm. When it's a fun activity, it's a lot easier for you to go out and participate. I also think it's wonderful that you're doing a great combination of upper extremity exercises. Canoeing is going to work your arms and your upper body. Swimming is upper body. Cross-country skiing, biking, both lower extremity exercises. They'll all get your heart working with cardiovascular work. And none of them are really jarring or loading to your lower extremity joints. Some people can develop some arthritis and some pain in their hips and knees with the aging process. You don't have to, but some people do. Those individuals would tolerate something like skiing or biking better than running and jogging. So picking the type of exercise, even though it's in a category of aerobic or strength training, is important.
James, thanks a lot for sharing that. Keep it up. Now, James is a wee bit older than I am. I'm not doing anywhere near as much exercise as James is. Carlin, I do walk a fair amount. I don't know. Does walking count?
Oh, that's a great question. Walking can count for general exercise outside. So if you're walking at a pace where you're starting to breathe a little bit heavier, you can carry on a conversation, but you're not huffing and puffing. That's probably moderate intensity, and there's nothing wrong with doing that if your goal is to get outside, work your heart muscle a little bit. If you wanted to be making your bones stronger or adding mass to your muscles, you would need to do something a little bit more than that. Doesn't mean that walking's not good. It means you can maybe mix and match different activities so you can accomplish all the goals that you're looking for. For adding some strength to your bones, you really need a little more impact. So you could walk maybe with trekking poles, and you'd be pounding your poles into the pavement while you're walking. That would be more of an impact load, if that makes sense.
Sure. Let's go to another caller now. Lyric is with us in Blanchardville. Lyric, hi.
Hi. A few years ago, I got injured and had a brain concussion, and the best medicine for me was that walking in water that Upland Hills and Dodgeville has, where you walk across the floor to an area and it lowers down into a pool that's about 9 feet wide and maybe 16 feet long. The water, if your knees or your ankles are injured, the water supports your body weight, and in front of you is a bar that you can hang on if you've got a balance problem, so you feel very safe. You can tell them how high you want the jets of water that are moving in the pool and how deep you want it. But my favorite thing was that the endorphins that your body gets when you're walking in that water is like the best antidepressant in the world, and it lasts 2 or 3 days at least. It's wonderful.
Lyric, thank you so much for sharing that. And that's, Carlin, for people who can't have a lot of impact, that could be a great option, it sounds like.
That is a great option. And she's absolutely right that when you can participate in an activity that makes you feel good and you do have the endorphin release, you know you're doing something positive for your body. But when it's fun and it's enjoyable, you're going to stick with it. And of course, for all of us, that's the real trick, is being able to find something that we can continue to do because it's fun and we enjoy it and it makes us feel good.
Lyric, thanks a lot for sharing that at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Carlin Ault, clinical professor of physical therapy at UW-Milwaukee, about how to adapt our exercise habits, our fitness routines, as we get older to help keep us mobile and healthy. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What goals do you have for remaining active as you age? Are there recreational or practical activities that you're worried about having to leave behind? Our guest might be able to help you find something that could replace it. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Carlin Alt, Clinical Associate Professor of Physical Therapy at UW-Milwaukee. We're talking about how we can change our workout, our fitness routine as we get older so we can continue to live active and healthy lives. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a lifelong exerciser? How did that change over the years, if at all? Have you hit an age where you're thinking, I got to start doing some stuff? Because you have a sedentary normal person job like radio host. I don't know. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Juneau. Jim, hello.
Hello. Yes. Thanks for taking the call. Anyways, I'm 60 this year, and during COVID, I tried seeing what retiring would look like, and I can't do it. And so I gave up my job that I had, and now I'm back into construction. I'll tell you what, it was hard getting going, but daggone it, I've never felt this good in my life. You know,
Jim, did you do exercise, apart from the exercise involved in the construction work itself? Like, were you doing stuff to build up to that?
Yeah. During the winter, I went ahead because they don't hire in the winter. So during the winter, I got a membership at the Y, and I made sure that I was, you know, doing the treadmills, walking the block around here, lifting a little weight to try and make sure that I wasn't going to strain something right out the gate. But, yeah.
I love it, Jim. Thanks a lot for sharing that story. Carlin, sounds like Jim was really smart about getting back into construction work there.
Yeah. Yes. Construction is certainly a physical job that will keep you using your muscles most definitely. One comment I do want to add to what Jim said is that the target, if most of us are going to the gym and working on muscle strengthening, we want to make sure that we're working hard enough that we're going to get some benefit out of it. And that is in physical therapy term, we'd be looking at like 60 to 80% of your one rep max, meaning the most that you can lift. But that's a little complicated for most of us to do when we go to the gym. But if you think about it in the number of repetitions you could do on an exercise, if I'm doing bicep curls to make my bicep, my upper arm stronger, I should be lifting a weight that's heavy enough that by the time I get to number 10, I could almost not do one more repetition. If I'm aiming for 10 repetitions, I'm probably at about 75% of my one rep max, which means I'm going to be giving my body a stimulus to add more muscle, add more protein. Anywhere between 8 and 12 is good, but 10 is kind of around that sweet spot. So that might help people is if you can do 30 and you think you're adding muscle mass, you need to push yourself a little harder with a heavier weight. So you can't do quite so many reps. That's the stimulus to add your muscle. And I'm sure that Jim is doing that when he's working construction, lifting heavy loads.
Jim, thanks a lot for sharing your story at 800-642-1234. Kenny is with us now in Rice Lake. Kenny, hi. Are you there, Kenny?
Yeah.
Hi. What did you want to tell us about?
I'm a welder by trade, and oftentimes in the shop I work in, I hear from the gentleman my age or in our 60s that all you need to do is work hard, and that's going to help you stay in good shape. When I've learned over the years that I like to go to the gym and work out and ride bicycle and do aerobic activities, and it seems to keep you in much better shape than just, quote, working hard.
All right. And Kenny, have you talked your coworkers into going biking with you or hitting the gym with you?
Boy, you know, they just don't seem to be really responsive to that. They don't want to jump in and go to the spin class at the gym, but maybe they will.
All right. Tell them we sent you, Kenny. Thanks a lot for sharing that story. Carlin, again, Kenny seems to be on the right track here.
Yeah, we have. Well, of course, we have wonderful listeners on public radio. They're,
yes.
They're all exercising. Terrific.
Kenny, thanks for the call. Carlin, one zone of exercise we haven't talked about a ton yet, related to you were talking about falls earlier, is balance. Now, when people are in their teens and 20s, they might not be thinking about balance as an exercise issue. Why does that get important? What can we do about it?
Balance is really important. Single leg balance, because if you think about standing at home and getting dressed, you're standing on one leg and have to put your leg through the other leg of the pant, or you have to sit down to be able to do that. So balance is important for walking, for transitions, for slippery surfaces, often, you know, getting up from sit to stand, you might have been dozing and you're startled. It's a real, it's a danger zone when you're making transitions between sit to stand, and that does relate to balance. In addition to just having good muscle strength and the ability to kind of take all of your weight, our vision changes, our hearing changes. We might have a lot of wax built up in our ears. The vestibular system and your visual system also play a role in balance. I often think of getting up to go to the bathroom at night. If your house is completely dark, you have taken away, you're a little bit groggy, and you've taken away that visual system from being able to help you with your balance. So I'm a big fan of night lights for aging population, so that as you take away some of those other supports for you to maintain good balance, vision and your vestibular system, that you're supporting yourself. If you've got any changes in diabetes or poor range of motion in your legs, that can affect your balance.
Talking to Carlin Ault from UW-Milwaukee, physical therapist there, talking about our changing exercise and fitness needs as we age. Back to your calls now with Kim in Mequon. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What's your story?
Well, I have been a lifelong exerciser. I am 69 this year. I still downhill ski, cross-country ski, ride my bike. I mean, I started riding a bike in my teens. I have three bikes. I still ride them. I rode my bike to work today and back. And my job is teaching fitness classes for seniors. So I cannot tell you how many times I've had someone come to the classes new and start working out. We do weight training. We do a little cardio. And they will come back to me like 3 or 4 months later and say, hey, I just went to my doctor, and my doctor's like, what are you doing? Keep it up. Your blood pressure's down. You know, your stats are really, really good. So I just want to say, if anybody is a little older and hasn't worked out for a long time, don't let that stop you, because you can get back into the game.
Kim, thanks a lot for the call and the inspiration. Carlin, Kim pointing toward the, like, even within a few months, apparently doctors noticing a difference when people get back into exercise.
Yeah, and absolutely. And there are some studies that will show that even into your 90s, you can add muscle mass. So that the body is very adaptive. And so you can start at any age and you will see changes. It does take... you know, 6 weeks at least to start to get muscle mass changes, but you can see improvement sooner than that. It's more of a neuromuscular training effect, but absolutely, you can see physical changes, body changes, strength, endurance changes, and you just overall, you feel better. And I will put in a little plug for protein, because as we age, the body's ability to, the amount of protein that we need to take in to help build our muscles, that changes a little bit. So everyone, but especially our older adults, need to be eating protein with just about every meal, because that's helping to maintain that muscle health and muscle strength.
Kim, thanks again for the call and the inspiration. Carlin, you mentioned, you know, people may have some different needs when it comes to exercise. I wanted to ask you about one of your specialties. You work with people on exercise and fatigue for survivors of cancer. What kind of different things might be at play there?
Well, cancer itself and all of the treatments for cancer can affect multiple systems in the body, can affect your heart muscle, so cardiovascular system. You can have loss of extensibility, so things end up getting a little bit tight, can have some changes in your bone. So all systems can be affected either through cancer and or cancer treatment. And for some reason, we tend to meaning the medical system, don't always routinely refer our patients who are undergoing or have completed treatment for cancer to physical therapy to get people back strength, muscle strength, cardiovascular conditioning. We don't do it in the same way that we do for heart attacks or for strokes or amputations. And that's really my mission, is to make sure that all cancer survivors, because there's millions of them, are treated with specific exercise to help people return back to a highly functional life. It's not just about surviving the treatment. It's about returning to thriving and having a really high quality of life, being strong and being able to enjoy every day because you do feel good.
Carlin, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
That's Carlin Ault, Clinical Associate Professor of Physical Therapy at UW-Milwaukee. We talked to her today about how we can change our workout and fitness routines as we get older to help keep us active, hopefully for years to come. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, today's tweens and teens live a big part of their lives online, and it can be tough to navigate the social media world. The author of the new book, Growing Up in Public, shares advice and the benefits and the downsides of social media use for young people. You can get started with your questions, maybe your kids' experiences or your own experience as a kid. Email ideas@WPR.org. Plus, the U.S. Farm Bill has a big impact here in Wisconsin, from farmers to food consumers, school meals, and food assistance. Get the latest on efforts to pass a new farm bill in Congress. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, climate change brings up the risk of more extreme rainfall and flooding here in Wisconsin. We'll talk to a civil and environmental engineer about how prepared we are and what more we can do to be ready for those flooding events. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.